Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. If you're drawn to literature that feels less like reading a story and more like stepping directly into someone's mind, then today's deep dive is definitely for you. We're exploring the world of Anita Desai.
Absolutely. Anita Desai, born back in 1937, is, well, truly one of the major figures in contemporary Indian writing and English. But her real genius, I think, isn't in the big sweeping narratives you might expect.
Right, she goes inward.
Yeah, exactly. She maps the inner landscape. She takes these massive historical moments, huge shifts like the partition, and filters them through something incredibly intimate, the family home, often a decaying one at that.
And she has this really interesting background, doesn't she? German and Bengali heritage.
Mm-hmm. And you definitely see that reflected, that sort of tension between tradition and perhaps a more modern outlook. She's brilliant at capturing the anxieties, the complex inner lives, especially of women who feel, you know, hemmed in by duty or their circumstances.
So today we're going to focus on how she uses memory and identity, but through two quite different lenses, two different settings.
That's the plan. We want to look at her classic family saga, Clear Light of Day, and then contrast it with a later work, a novella called Rosarita, which explores cultural identity in a very different way.
Okay, so our mission here is to sort of unpack what really ties us to our past. Is it family, trauma, our cultural roots? Are those things fixed?
Or is identity maybe something more fluid, something we actually build or, you know, grow as we navigate the world? That's the core question we're digging into.
Let's start with the big one then, Clear Light of Day, from 1980.
Yes, this is often seen as her masterpiece. It was shortlisted for the Booker Prize, really cemented her reputation.
In the atmosphere in this book, it's just everything. We're in old Delhi in this large family house, but it's decaying.
It is. It feels neglected, but more than that, it feels stagnant, like time is pooled there. And the story isn't really driven by, you know, a fast-paced plot.
No, not at all.
It's all about the currents of memory swirling around. It's just superb psychological domestic fiction.
And the spark that ignites it all is Tara's return.
Right. Tara's the younger sister. She kind of escaped, you could say, through an early marriage to a diplomat. Now she's back to visit Bim.
Bim, the older sister, the intellectual, the history professor who stayed, who never married.
Yeah, and who became the, well, the reluctant guardian of the house and also the caretaker for their younger brother, Baba, who is autistic.
So right away, that sets up the central tension, doesn't it? If you're someone who left, like Tara, can you ever really escape that past, that formative place?
Where does it define you? Always. The house, the family, the memories you tried to leave behind.
Let's talk about the siblings, the four Das siblings.
Okay, so you have Bim, sharp, intellectual, but simmering with resentment. She carries the weight.
Then Tara, who is more passive, maybe, always trying to keep the peace.
Yes, seeking harmony. And then Baba, he's autistic, mostly silent. His main connection seems to be through the old 1940s records he plays constantly on the gramophone. He's like an anchor, stuck in time.
And the fourth. The absent one.
Raja. Ah, Raja. He's the ghost looming over everything. He was the golden boy, the ambitious one, the poet.
Mentored by their Muslim landlord, Haider Ali. That's important context, too.
Very important. Raja eventually leaves, marries Haider Ali's daughter, actually, and goes off to Hyderabad to become this wealthy, successful businessman. He leaves the decaying world of old Delhi behind.
And Bim feels utterly abandoned.
Utterly. It's not just sibling rivalry. It feels like a profound betrayal to her. Raja didn't just leave. He sort of cut ties. And his ambition, linking up with the Haider Ali family, it tied into the post-partition shifts too, leveraging that connection.
It makes his leaving feel like more than just personal. It's almost, yeah, an economic and emotional severing.
Exactly. And that cold, formal letter he sends Bim later, that's the physical proof of it for her.
The landlord letter, treating her like a tenant in their childhood home, discussing rent.
It's brutal. So clinical. It reduces everything they shared, their whole past in that house, to a mere transaction. It just cuts so deep.
Which explains why Bim holds on to that bitterness for so long.
Precisely. And this is where Desai's nonlinear structure is so effective. We don't just move forward, we shift constantly.
I'm back and forth between the tense present day with all this resentment simmering and the past.
Yeah, back to their childhood, their adolescence, especially around the time of partition in 1947. It's immersive.
It's not just a flashback technique, is it? It feels more like how memory actually works, how trauma works.
That's a great way to put it. It surfaces non-chronologically. It shapes the present, whether you want it to or not.
And through these glimpses of the past, we start to understand why they became the adults they are.
We see Raj's illness, his tuberculosis, which actually made him rely heavily on Bim, deepening their bond back then.
We see the parents, emotionally absent, always off at the club.
Mm-hmm. Total neglect, really. And the tragic figure of their caretaker, Miramasi, this alcoholic aunt who sort of absorbed all the dysfunction, her decline is heartbreaking.
And that image from childhood, Tara hiding in the well.
Oh, yes. Terrifying, but so symbolic. She felt inadequate at a party, runs off, hides deep down in this dark well. It perfectly represents her way of dealing with things, retreating into fear, into the hidden depths of trauma.
Okay, so all this history, all this buried feeling, it has to come out eventually.
It does. In the climax of the present-day story, Bim finally snaps. She just unleashes decades of fury onto Tara.
And she uses Raj's letter, recites it like a venom.
She does. It's a painful, raw moment.
Yeah.
But crucially, it's not just destructive. It's a necessary catharsis.
Because what happens next inside Bim is the real turning point.
Exactly. Right after the outburst, she has this quiet moment of realization. She sees the utter futility and self-destructiveness of clinging to that anger for so long.
So the forgiveness, it comes from within her. It's not about Raja changing or apologizing.
Not at all. It's entirely internal. She finds that old letter from Raja, the source of so much pain, and she destroys it, symbolically, physically letting go.
And that's when she reaches a kind of grace.
I think so. She finally sees them all, the four siblings, not as separate broken pieces, but as this inseparable four-headed organism bound together.
Their roots are unbreakable. Her destiny is tied to them, but it doesn't have to be a life sentence of bitterness.
And that right there is the clear light of day.
Mm-hmm.
The title.
Yeah, okay. Clarity.
Yes. She sees the truth of her life, her family, her feelings, not through the fog of resentment anymore, but clearly, as if in daylight. And that acceptance, that's her liberation, even though the roots are fixed.
It's such a powerful arc. Realizing that staying, but changing your perspective on staying, can be its own form of freedom.
Beautifully put. Clear Light of Day really emphasizes accepting those unbreakable roots. But Desai didn't stop there. Her exploration of identity kept evolving.
Which takes us to the second work we wanted to discuss, the novella Rosarita.
Right. Published much later in 2016, sources suggest, though there's some complexity around his publication history, but the themes are fascinating. Here, Desai shifts gears completely.
We leave old Delhi behind.
Totally. We move from that heavy historical weight to the question of cultural hybridity and displacement. And the setting changes dramatically.
To Mexico, San Miguel Allende.
Exactly. Vibrant, artistic, high-altitude energy. A world away from the dusty decay of the Delhi house. The focus is now on cultural identity, not just family history.
And the protagonist is Bonita, a Mexican-American woman.
Middle-aged, yes. She goes to Mexico trying to connect with her Mexican heritage, something she feels disconnected from living in America. But she finds herself stuck.
In that liminal space, as the outline calls it.
Yeah, the in-between feeling, neither fully Mexican nor fully American. And it's causing her real anguish. She's searching for her authentic identity.
But the novella seems to suggest that authentic might not mean pure.
Precisely. That's the journey. Bonita starts to see this liminality, this hybridity, not as a flaw or a lack, but as a unique viewpoint, a source of creative power even, a kind of third space.
So comparing her to Bim, it's quite different, isn't it? Bim had to accept the roots she couldn't escape.
Whereas Bonita's grappling with whether roots are something you inherit passively or something you actively have to find or maybe even grow yourself.
And art plays a big role for Bonita.
A huge role. The environment itself is key. San Miguel is steeped in art. Bonita immerses herself in Mexican artistic traditions. She thinks about Diego Rivera, the murals, the incredibly vibrant colors everywhere.
The colors seem important.
Very. Desai contrasts the intense blues and reds of Mexico with the muted tones Bonita associates with her life in the U.S. It's a visual metaphor.
For an emotional awakening, shedding a kind of muted identity.
Exactly. She starts using these vibrant elements, this artistic energy, to express her own complex hybrid self. She's actively constructing her identity from both sides.
So what's the turning point for her?
It's this realization that home was not a location, but a way of seeing. It's not about finding one place or one pure culture to belong to. It's about how she integrates her experiences internally.
That's a very different kind of resolution than BIMS.
It is. Rosarita seems to embrace the idea that identity can be fluid, multiple. Authenticity lies in acknowledging that complexity, not in striving for some kind of cultural purity. It's about seeing the mix as a strength.
Okay, so let's try and synthesize this. We have these two powerful works mapping the inner life.
Right. Clear Light of Day looks at identity under the crushing weight of history, kind of stagnated in one place, that house in Delhi.
While Rosarita looks at identity being actively constructed across different places, different cultures, America, Mexico.
Both explore the human heart, the search for belonging. But one finds peace through accepting fixed roots. The other finds it through embracing fluidity and construction.
So what's the universal takeaway here from Desai? What does she teach us, you think?
I think it boils down to courage. The courage not necessarily to escape the past, whether that's family trauma like BIMS or cultural displacement like Bonita's, but the courage to face it, to integrate it.
And that letting go, that forgiveness or acceptance, it's always an inside job.
Always. It's an internal act. That seems to be the quiet, persistent lesson in her work.
Her writing really has this enduring power, doesn't it? Taking the pain of displacement, personal or cultural, and finding these moments of quiet grace within it.
Absolutely. Her stories insist that we find our truest selves right there, at that crossroads where memory meets hope.
She really makes you look at your own ghosts, the things you carry from your past, and pushes you towards finding that clarity, even if it's a harsh light sometimes, like that clear light of day.
It's ultimately liberating, though. That clarity.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.